Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
And we have a special guest with us this evening, Dr. Alicia Davidson, who specializes in aquatic invasive species. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're going to have to get responsible, aren't we?
Yeah, before that, we should do a shameless plug.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, let's stall as long as we can. All right, guys. Well, I hope you know the deal by now. Go to watercolorsaquariumgallery.com to shop for live plants, to shop for aquarium supplies, or we've got merch designed by Ben and myself. So t-shirts, we've got cool watercolors hats now, some water bottles, all sorts of really fun stuff. Stickers, that's always fun. And also head over to the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast listeners group on Facebook to talk about the show, to post pictures of your tank. It's just a really fun fish group to be in. So definitely join that if you're on Facebook. And if you are a fan of YouTube, you can head over there and get access to these podcasts live. We have this interview up live for our members right now. Hello, members.
Hello. I want to talk about the Facebook group real quick because Ben and I were talking about that before the recording session. So in the most recent episode we released, it was our reintroduction. We got very open, very personal, and very vulnerable in that episode. And people responded very positively to that. We had many people commiserating with us about like things they're dealing with in their life outside of keeping tanks. And I personally wanted to say, Shauna, sorry about your dog.
Yeah. Yoshi.
Oh.
He looked so sweet, too.
So,
yes, thanks for those, for sharing with us like that. That was, it was kind of a powerful episode that we did that night. And so to get that kind of feedback from it, it was great. So thank you very much.
Yes, it was. Today wasn't a great day for me, but it started off with like people opening up like that after we did. It felt good.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we've got about 800 people in there right now, but it just really feels like kindred spirits. You know, it's a community.
Yeah, for sure. It was great.
Anyway.
Now we got to talk about being responsible aquarists.
Oof, yeah.
I wouldn't say just aquarists, responsible stewards of the environment that is our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We don't spend a lot of time thinking about our homes on this podcast. We're thinking about places around the world that we may never get to see.
Well, tonight we're going to talk about how it hits home. And so Alicia is, should I call you Alicia or should I call you Dr. Davidson?
Definitely Alicia.
That's what I thought.
So anyways,
we gotta get a couple
Davidson.
Of doctors out of the way at the beginning.
Dr. Alicia.
Just because it makes us seem cool that we get to hang out with you.
Right. Just a little side note, Alicia also is a very good friend of mine, so that's part of why we get the privilege of having you on the podcast tonight. So I know cool people, so we get to have cool people on the show.
I would hope our listeners are already familiar with Alicia from the podcast we've done before. If not, please go back and listen to them. I think they're some of our best episodes.
No, if not, shame on you. Go back and listen to those episodes. We did our top five favorite episodes we've done list, and I'm pretty sure I had trouble deciding between the two episodes that she's been on before, and I think I picked the Lacey Act Amendment one to be on my list.
Yeah, definitely worth the listen.
Yeah.
The only thing that I don't like about those podcasts is she always proves me wrong.
Yeah. Not
it's
hard
called,
to do.
Ooh. That's a burn.
Shot right at the bow.
That's science, though. It's like you get your data and someone else comes along with better data and slam dunks on you and you're like, all right, fine, whatever.
So mostly what we're going to talk about today is some, are the actual proposals in front of the DNR right now, or are they just like things that people are watching with these plants?
So mostly watching. I have published a couple of papers on water lettuce and water hyacinth. So when you originally told me that this is what we were talking about,
yep.
It is, so I published a paper in 2021 that highlights the 21 species that should be regulated that are either currently not regulated or are under regulated.
Do you have the title of your paper that you can just read off here?
You know, I don't have a title of my paper. No shameless plug. It's about organisms in trade. So things that are being sold in, live trade, water garden, aquarium industry. I should pull that up, but maybe you have it.
Specific to Michigan?
Great Lakes.
Great Lakes. Mm-hmm.
So we look at, there are 10 Great Lakes jurisdictions, 8 states, 2 provinces, cannot forget Canada. They are awesome. And
Don't forget Canada.
And so water lettuce and water hyacinth, which are the special ones that we're going to focusing on tonight, they're a floating aquatic plant. There are many floating aquatic plants, but they're two of the most high profile. I know they're really popular in the industry. And of these 21 species, water lettuce was number two. And so, sorry, I should back up. We had this list, biggest impacts, right? The ones that are the biggest, nastiest invasive species. And the ones of all these that are not regulated, which means we can still sell them. They can still be sold anywhere in the Great Lakes. And so we looked at, okay, if we're going to add some to the list, what's a good one? Water lettuce and water hyacinth were number two and number four. So big impacts. Water lettuce is only regulated by one Great Lakes jurisdiction. Water hyacinth only regulated by two. So that's, in case you're curious, Wisconsin, and then Wisconsin and Minnesota. So currently legal for sale in Michigan.
I did find, or Eva did find the name of the paper, so I'm going to just read it off real quick. It's Assessing Progress in Regulation of Aquatic Non-Indigenous Species Across the Multi-Jurisdictional Waters of the Laurentian Great Lakes with Emphasis on the Live Trade Pathways.
Yeah, see why I can't remember that anymore.
or search Alicia Davidson on Google Scholar, and then it will come up.
Yeah, yeah, I have it saved as OIT trade paper.
Out of curiosity, what was number one and three?
So I believe, I do have that list. Alligator weed, I believe, was...
Is that hydrilla?
No, that's Alternanthera phloxoides. I don't know if you know that one.
That must be a pond one, not a... I don't think that's an aquarium trade.
Yes, I think you're... I think that sounds right.
Okay.
And then the other one, I would have to look up. So you guys talk amongst yourself, and I can quickly pull up that list.
I looked up that alligator weed. Yeah, I do not recognize it. But Alternanthera is a genus that we're dealing with a lot.
For sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Oh, of course. Number one, Salvinia molesta.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a bunch of Salvinia minima, molesta. There's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, pretty much, I mean, most of the Salvinias we see would probably be put into the category of potential invasives, I would think.
Yeah.
It all would depend on what their cold tolerance is, right? I mean, that's going to be the big factor with whether or not...
It's a risk? It's a hazard,
yeah.
You mean?
Yeah.
Yes. So all of these species were assessed based on, the potential for them to arrive, right? Like, are they sold? Are they nearby? Mm-hmm. Their impact, how bad, both ecologically and, socially, recreationally, and then their establishment, which is, can they survive? And so that's a tough one because things are changing. What can survive and what can't? Things are getting warmer, winters are getting milder, and so that is currently a big uncertainty for water lettuce and water hyacinth and other ones that are normally, warm tropical species. They are being found in, Michigan and all these cold places, and there's a few locations where it's actually been found year after year after year. And so it's this really cool question that people and researchers are trying to figure out is, why are they finding it in the same spots? Is it just same old Joe Schmo is dumping his tank in the water, or are they setting seed? So of course we know that the vegetative forms, the leaves and the flowers, they aren't going to survive a hard frost and a hard freeze. But in their native habitats, so they reproduce vegetatively, right? The stems grow, they double, they triple, but then they also flower and they set seeds. Those sink down to the sediment and stay there.
Down into the decomposing mud.
And so, are they setting seed? And it's really hard to observe because, you can't monitor every single population. And so there's a lot of uncertainty is, why is it showing up in the same places? And why is it,
That's interesting forming. That you looked at, and it makes total sense, but I could totally picture Joe Pondkeeper every year cleans out his pond at the end in the fall and just washes it all out and lets it wash downstream.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a potential reason under certain circumstances that it shows up in the same spot every year. If he cleans his... Oh, in the fall, it wouldn't survive. He would have
I was going to say, so it's not the fall thing.
So brings it, as he brings it back out in the spring, if he keeps it inside, brings it back out and cleans things and it gets out that way.
But why would he be dumping it in the spring?
No, it doesn't make sense when you say it like that.
If you're growing water lettuce, you're getting rid of water lettuce.
That's true.
So
that's true.
You know, there are any number of places you could be dumping it. You could have a just pile of compost that you're putting it in that gets washed out. I don't know.
Yeah.
Theoretically, there are ways.
Although not the most likely.
Yeah.
Just covering the bases, right?
Doesn't seem like something that would work perfectly every year if you were just doing something like that.
Right. It's tough because, you know, where they do find it, it's more Southeast Michigan in, you know, more urban areas. There is a correlation between population, which is, you know, people are going to be releasing stuff. But, you know, they're big volumes. I mean, some of them are just a few plants, but the one, it was a drain. A lot of times they find them in these sort of drains off like main canals that are, you know, still good habitats for these kinds of floating plants. 3,000 pounds of water lettuce.
3,000 pounds.
Harvested in 2021. It's called Miller Drain. So like, I mean, and you know, these plants, for people who aren't familiar with them, in like Florida, in pretty much anywhere south of, you know, a latitude like Florida, they are like tons, metric tons of these plants. And so what they do is, you know, they impede habitat by restricting water flow. They shade everything. They increase mosquito habitat. So, you know, They kind of create this water habitat where you get more mosquito growth. They impede recreation. You know, you can't boat in all these places. And so, you know, they're a big deal in many, many parts of the world. And there have been, actually did a review of control methods for a whole bunch of these. And they try physical methods, like just harvesting with these boats. But it's like, where do you put like tons of rotting vegetation?
Right.
And how do you transport that? And then, you know, and then it, so it doubles. So water lettuce doubles in 3 weeks. Water hyacinth doubles in like 1 to 2 weeks. Oh, geez. So it's like, you're just, you know, you're shoveling snow during a blizzard.
Yeah.
Basically. Right. And so
I wonder if it would make good fertilizer.
I mean, if you had a place to put it, that might be not be a bad one. But there's, you know, there's chemical methods, there's biological control. I mean, people have thrown everything at these two species and they're just, it's still like barely denting the surface.
I just had a thought on something you said. You said there was a correlation between urban environments and these things being more prevalent. These are also environments that there's a strong correlation between urbanized regions and warmer water temperatures, because you're removing a lot of the features like tree cover. They're building features that slow the flow of water. These are all things that increase the temperature in these areas.
Right. Well, and like, you know, you aerate ponds, so you prevent ice cover, so you keep the water open. You know, you get like wastewater plants, like plants that produce like a warm effluent. And so you get these microhabitats that are just warm enough to, you know, let this plant survive over the winter, and then it just explodes in the spring. And, you know, what I was going to mention earlier that we haven't really talked about is the whole climate not staying the same. whether or not you're into that, I think it's
strong opinions on that, apparently. Yeah. Just punched my mic.
And you know, that's only gonna you know, things like that hemlock woolly adelgid, that's an terrestrial invasive. Kudzu, there's plenty of terrestrials and aquatics that they're finding in places they've never found before. Creeping north, and water lettuce and water hyacinth, water spang. I mean, there's a whole bunch of invasive aquatic plants that are just going to be, you know, they've got a longer growing season. They can overwinter potentially. And, you know, in the more, so one of my sort of points when I came today is, you know, why shouldn't pond stores, and do you guys sell water lettuce and water hyacinth?
We've probably got 10 tanks of water lettuce right now.
Okay.
Oh, no water hyacinth.
You're dead to me. We're not friends anymore. you know, sure, if someone releases it, it dies. But then if you have 100 people releasing it, you know, nature is very adaptable.
It's a lot like the analogy that I would throw out there that a lot of people would intuitively get at this point is like, you get one, like, COVID virus in your system, you're probably not going to get infected. But if you get like hundreds, one of them's going to stick.
Well, and one of them's going to mutate.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
The genes of water, you know, I'm not a geneticist, but, you know, things adapt. You get cold hardy, cold tolerant varieties of many plants. And so, you know, having something being released in Michigan is going to select for something that can survive in colder temperatures. I mean, possibly. Obviously, I can't, you know, scientist in me never says for sure. That's the problem. Yeah. We just say likely.
But kind of like we have a tomato plant that comes back every year.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
it's from seed, but the seed survives.
Yeah, and if you were to probably plant those seeds, like take the fruit and propagate those seeds, you would have a whole bunch of plants that might come back every year. And all of a sudden you have a, you know, perennial tomato plant.
I do want to harp on this climate change thing a little bit. Like every opportunity I can, I'm going to. It, like the global warming that we're experiencing right now is actually really weird. As in, like a lot of people don't. Like a lot of people will throw that, like, yeah, climate is cyclic. And the answer is, yes, it is. But we are in an ice age right now. We're technically in an interglacial period during an ice age. It's really weird for ice to be melting as fast as it is during an ice age.
Yeah.
That's not normal, guys. That's not how it's supposed to function.
So I'm gonna play a little devil's advocate here.
Please do.
Okay. So water lettuce was first described in the United States in 1765. It's been here, and where it originates from is most likely South and Central America, but there's still some discussion as to where it officially originates from. And it was an interesting little side note on the best argument for why it's thought to have originated in South America is because there's the best. There are other creatures more adapted to live with it, on it, and consume it in South America than anywhere else, which is kind of one of the, oh, that's probably means they evolved there together.
Sure. Right?
So it was either brought to the southern United States very, very, very early on, pre-1765, or it slowly moved its way there and had a small population that somehow naturally got there.
Mm.
One of the two, right? Either way, it was in Florida long before anyone had any idea about invasive species or that something like that could be a problem, right? And it's been slowly creeping its way north. It's coming.
Oh, it's here. I mean,
it's here, right? At this point, well, okay, and then here's another point. You mentioned that currently it's controlled in Wisconsin.
Right? Well, so it's right, which means it's listed on a list saying you cannot sell this. So it's
in Wisconsin.
Water lettuce, correct, is Wisconsin. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And then water hyacinth, Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Correct.
Right. Granted, part of the reason those are states like the Great Lakes states that would want to regulate things like that is because of the economic impact we have because of the amazing lake systems that we have here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Recognize. The wholesaler that I saw it on the list from is located in Illinois, and they ship to Indiana. It's not regulated in Indiana. It's not regulated in Illinois. Is there a point to regulating it here? I mean, is the cat not out of the bag?
Oh, no, it's definitely, I mean, it's when I said it's here, the cat is, you know, tiptoeing around, but the cat doesn't live here permanently. And as I mentioned before, you know, yeah, sure. Why do you regulate it when we've already found all these populations around Michigan? You know, even going even farther than your point, why do you regulate it when you can order it online? Even if it's, you know, even in states where it's illegal, it's, you know, the online, I shouldn't probably say this, it's not extremely well policed, unfortunately. Right. There's been a lot of attempts to try and figure that out, but it's a very slippery subject. And so, you know, what's the point of harming a brick and mortar store like you guys by saying you can't sell it when someone can just go buy it from Amazon or another online supplier?
From Wish.
Right?
From Wish. Well, so a counterpoint to that would be the dojo loach.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which, and the marbled crayfish, both of those relatively recently became illegal to buy and sell in the state of Michigan. And before that, you could go into any pet store and you could buy it, and they were available to anyone.
Yep.
Since then, with Dojo Loaches, I've heard of two people that have had them. Yeah. So, although actually the same wholesaler that says they won't ship water lettuce to Wisconsin has Dojo Loaches, and it says on there won't ship to Michigan, and I think one other place. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a point to, yeah, you could still get it online, but if you decrease availability, you decrease access.
Well, that was that was my point. If you had let me finish, why do you regulate it and not allow it to be sold? And that is exactly what you said: availability. For 99% of the people, what they're potentially going to buy is what they walk into their store and they see. I remember a couple of years ago in the summer, I was driving some rural road. I literally saw water lettuce on like water hyacinth on a cardboard sign like for sale in someone's front yard. Yep. And like a DNR person, they're gonna halt that and potentially find alternatives for that person to sell, hopefully not impeding their livelihood too much. I'm not sure how much they're making from this yard side stand, but it's exactly and availability. And then back to my point of the more times you have it released, the more likely it is that it's gonna stick. And so
And the point that I would throw out there too is that like a lot of people take for granted that Michigan in particular, like all of our waterways aren't necessarily interconnected. So like yes, if we get it into, let's say, the Manistee watershed, okay, yeah, but what about all these non-connected ponds or other streams in different parts? Like if we can stop people from passing it around, we might be able to at least limit it to these specific watersheds. Michigan is just wildly crazy to me with how complex the water system is.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that when caught early can, you can eradicate it because it's so visible. It's floating. It's really easy to get to and to remove when it's in its like really early stages.
I think it's one of the episodes you brought up. That's why we have so many unioned mussels, because like they have room to specialize because they're non-connected water systems.
Right. And this is going to shade out those unionids and like decrease dissolved oxygen and probably not maybe wipe them out, but it's definitely going to reduce their population. So yeah.
It's hard for me to see how regulation can limit availability when how do people come to know about the regulation? Well, I check the invasive species list a couple of times a year, but I don't know that everybody's doing that. And to Ben's point, I've heard of a local store selling somebody Dojo Loaches within the last 5 years. So, and the people there had no idea that there was even a problem with it.
Recently someone tried to trade in Kabamba and we're like,
Yeah, the only time anyone has ever come to ask us about our stock was a grad student writing a paper seeing if we had crayfish.
Right. Well, I mean, that's where sometimes the top-down approach is really going to work, is that, like you mentioned, your wholesaler knows the rules, they're going to be informed, and is not dependent on the consumer. For example, in, Europe, all the, food dyes, red dye number 40, they're prohibited. The consumer doesn't have to worry about policing their food safety as much as we do here in the U.S. because, the government's kind of is watching that. And so the same thing for, the aquarium trade is that if it's not even offered for sale, then the, person coming in doesn't even have to worry about it. And then, there's the other point I wanted to make for the aquarium store is, I don't know how much you guys do native. I know you're mostly a sort of in-home aquarium, but pond, there's tons of alternatives. There's an app, it's called Landscape Alternatives, that you can find, natives floating, plants are either emergent, they're in the bottom, they're floating and they have flowers. There's all these different reasons that people like water lettuce and water hyacinth. They're real beautiful and showy. And there's plenty of natives that you can find instead
that are prettier sometimes too.
Yeah. And that's where, say agencies and then places like Ripple, there's a lot of organizations that are going to help find those.
Listen, I don't have a biased opinion at all, but I know this feels like an argument for a well-educated small local fish store staff.
But I have accidentally bought prohibited species from our wholesalers before.
That is true.
Did you? Which one?
Elodia.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Eva was asking if, like, what are the legalities around us actually carrying native species?
So, I mean, I have to admit, limits to my knowledge, that is something that I can't talk to. Obviously, I imagine there'd be, you know, you couldn't carry, like, threatened species of sort of conservation value. But like I said, that ripple, I mean, there would be a lot of places to find that out. The other thing, you know, like logistics of like water temperature in a home, like do you guys do many native fish?
No, we cannot sell native fish without a native. There's a special license they have to get to be able to sell native fish.
Okay.
I don't know how that applies to plants.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the same because there's not. Pretty widely like advocated for like selling these. There's like marsh marigold and pennywort, all kinds.
Well, and there's different rules around collecting and selling. And this is already a universe where we're talking about going out and finding our own stock in the wild, which is not practical.
I mean,
so I tried it once with Vallisneria, Val Americana.
Oh, yep.
And I had it growing great in an aquarium.
Okay.
I collected it on a nice hot summer day and put it in a tank and watched it do great until October. And October, I just started noticing that it wasn't doing quite as well. And by November, it was completely gone. So the strain of Vallisneria that is found locally, and oh, by the way, it's Vallisneria Americana, which we get from our Florida wholesalers and we grow like crazy. I think you have it in your tank at home.
Mm-hmm.
The local strain is adapted to dying off in the winter.
Okay.
I don't know about other, well, all of the aquatic plants are adapted to dying off in the winter. I don't know if they will do that naturally if it doesn't get cold. The Vallisneria, the temperature didn't drop below 68 degrees in that aquarium.
Right.
And it still died off.
Yeah.
So I don't know how viable that is for aquariums. Keeping plants, there's plenty of plants that we can keep that have no chance currently of surviving in Michigan.
Right.
Right. There's substitutions for all of these things. Redroot floater is a class. Philanthem.
Fluitans.
Fluitans, thank you. Philanthem fluitans is a classic that, from what I understand, so far is not going to survive in Michigan for decades.
Sure.
Eventually, you know, when palm trees survive here, then, which is going to happen. Yeah. Maybe even your kids have grandkids. But
yeah, like, is it just inevitable that we're going to have, you know, an entirely homogenous United States with all the same stuff if we warm up enough?
Yeah, and they're all going to, yeah, they're all going to be invasive. So probably not even going to be from America. But anyways, we don't need to go down that route. I was going to go back to your point of, you know, what's the point when, you know, you've say, accidentally bought dojo.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, we all know, like, to say that there's no point in doing something if it's the right thing to do, if it's not 100% effective, like, that's just an argument of futility, right? We know that you have to try. And that another reason for, you know, you guys, I really pat you on the back for all of your work and focus on invasives. And that, you know, it's up to, you know, aquariums can be a great source of information. And, you know, being leaders in this kind of area is, you know, it's an opportunity, not a limitation.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Are you talking about
that?
Like,
was like a really profound thing. So
yeah.
Thank you. That was great. And it's something that we try really hard to be. And that's the reason that we're having this discussion today. I don't want to stop selling water lettuce, but we're probably going to stop selling water lettuce, right?
Yep.
And these are the kind of discussions that we have to have for us to really understand it, but also so that we have the right things to say to people when somebody comes in the door, hey, I need some water lettuce. I bought some here 2 weeks ago. And then we know what to say to that person with why we don't have it anymore.
Right.
So that's honestly, I set this discussion up where Alicia would tell us why we shouldn't keep it. And we'd all try to convince her why we should anyway. And then I whispered in her ear, said, but you're going to win the argument. I mean, I knew that was going to happen because science and stuff.
But these are the questions that we've had. We've talked to somebody who says, you know, those canals don't matter. Who cares if there's invasives in them?
Right.
Right.
What was the, I'm trying to remember, there was some guy on our one of our live streams that was just like, what's the point of this? Extinction is normal. And then I went off. And then and then one of our, someone else in the chat was like, wow, Charles is mean when he's drinking rum. I was like, that is the dumbest take I've ever heard.
Right. But yeah, I mean, you know, I used to do, during my thesis, I did work with like looking at, you know, behavior and, you know, how people change their behavior and hearing information from a place like your own local fish store versus hearing it from, you know, like a state agency or a DNR officer, like you guys are much more trustworthy to that person. And like hearing it from you is going to be, you know, much more convincing and important to them than, you know, reading it on some, you know, website by, you know, Sea Grant. There's all these great organizations that do good work, but just having this personal connection and hearing it from you guys is going to be like much more impactful.
I ain't trusting the government. They say they put people on the moon.
Right.
Oh God.
We try to be that. Somebody's got it.
You're fighting a good fight, man. It's good.
It's also just more efficient to disperse information that way. Like,
right.
I don't know. It's hard to feel like you're the one person pushing back against something. You know, somebody making a personal choice not to put water lettuce in their tank. Can they feel like they're making a difference?
I struggle with that. Everyone struggles with that, yeah. Right? Like,
it's just modern living.
How do I, like, my hanging my clothes and like not using the dryer like one time, is that going to like actually stop climate change? No, it's not. But it still doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. And it still doesn't mean that you should look for something else besides water lettuce.
Redroot floater, seriously, is a fantastic alternative.
There are all sorts of really cool floating plants out there that nobody ever talks about. There's a floating sensitive fern.
Yeah.
That's one I really want to get.
It's nice.
Amazon frogbit. How's that one? Do you know? I mean,
I don't know. The only one that I know is the illegal one.
Right.
The European origin.
They're kind of difficult to tell apart. But in the last 5 years, we did have one person try to trade in the illegal one. And when we told them what it was, they went, oh, my gosh. And they freaked out and they were so sorry. And I think we took it from them, called the DNR and said, hey, this is what we got. What should we do? And they gave us instructions on how to properly dispose of it.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah.
I'm sure they were like, so like that this kind of call never comes in. They're probably like so excited to hear from you guys.
They're like, we've been bored all day.
we have someone who's like proactively wanting to do the right thing. Oh my goodness.
We do actually have a question from one of our live members for you. And this might be a bit of a stretch since they're not from Michigan. But they say, and I'm just going to read it the way that it is. It's from William. He says, hello from San Diego. I and our local club struggle to find a definitive list of illegal plants for our area. Local, state, and federal rules are all confusing. Even local stores seem confused. Do you have any suggestions on what group or organization to reach out to get a list? Government, trade org, academia? Where do they start?
Your DNR.
Yeah, I mean, their state DNR would definitely have that. Because it's you're totally right, William. The federal laws have a couple of species, and then the state laws have a couple, and even the definition of how things are regulated, there's regulated, restricted, prohibited. Like there's all these different words that have slightly different meanings about what you can actually do with the thing. And so I'm sure someone from your state agency would be thrilled. There is an organization called Sea Grant. Like SEA grant, that they often have a lot of outreach specialists. So if you Googled California Sea Grant invasive species, you would come up with someone who would also be able to definitely tell you that.
So even if you can't find a list, find a person and reach out directly and they'll probably be thrilled to have the conversation. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably even worth that while I'm just going to challenge some clubs. Hey, I bet there's someone from your DNR department that would love to do a talk for you guys on the matter.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that, what else? There is a website, it's called USGS, everyone knows that, and it's called NAS, Non-Indigenous Aquatic Species, and it's a database, and that's a national one. So the one that I always refer to is called GLANSIS. It's great, Lakes Aquatic Non-Indigenous Species Information System. And you can do like a search by the Latin name, by the common name. But then there's a federal one for people in other states that would, you'd be able to search, if you had a specific question on like a species, it wouldn't give you probably the full list. Which is often the other problem is that it gets updated and then it's hard to keep those lists when they're online, like current. So
one of the things that I did to prepare for this was, look at the DNR sites from other states, particularly as you go further south.
Okay.
And the Michigan site, where their section on aquatic invasive species, it's actually pretty good. And this is what you are not allowed to have. This is what you shouldn't have. This is what you should be careful with. And don't.
There's like a real list with pictures. Right. It's great.
Georgia. There's a little section on you shouldn't dump non-native species.
Right.
And I think there might be some that are restricted in Georgia, but I'm not sure that they're. Are if they are restricted, they're not easy to find. It was very disheartening to look at the Georgia site. Kentucky wasn't much better. Indiana was okay. There was a little bit of a list, but there are all kinds of things that are legal in Indiana that aren't here and have a way higher likelihood of getting established in Indiana than they do in Michigan. So that was kind of disheartening to look at that list.
Especially Georgia, so close to Florida. You'd right. think they'd try to be really locked down if they can.
I mean, yeah.
They also have the Georgia Aquarium. That's a resource to look into for potential information. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're in Georgia, God help you. No. Yeah. local universities would potentially be doing some research on that. Yeah, no, it's hard for states. Like, I'm thinking you're coming on Indiana. The other issue is that oftentimes, like, a native range would overlap. So Indiana might have something that's native to the south of Indiana, not in the Great Lakes watershed. And so they can't actually regulate it, or it's very challenging. And so whereas maybe they don't want it sold in the north and, like, sort of the Great Lakes watershed and the Ohio River watershed or Mississippi, thing is native. And so it's challenging.
Probably the most extreme example off the top of my head is the southern tip of Illinois, the very southern tip, that is the northernmost cypress swamp in the Western Hemisphere. Like,
it's a completely different ecosystem.
It's a completely different ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it's hard for, also another issue that comes into play, obviously not you guys, but there, do you guys know, like, the reason why water lettuce and water hyacinth probably aren't regulated in a lot of states?
I just would assume it's economic impact, but
well, it's I mean, potentially.
Yeah.
Again, the impact of regulating it. There's industry lobbies that don't want it to not be sold, and so it's hard because state agencies, DNR, the Eagle in Michigan, they're trying to do the right thing. And it can be really challenging because they do want to, they want to protect, you guys and other pond stores who are, a lot of livelihoods. And so, it's a compromise between, not just saying, no, you can't do this, but also here are alternatives. And, they aren't just the, big bad government people. They do, they do care. And yet they also want to prevent, I was saying during the break, water lettuce has been found in Grand Rapids. Very small population, has been since removed. But, it's very close to where we are. And
I have a friend who used to have a pond business, and he had one of the little wet areas on his property. His water hyacinth would grow back every year. And this was 15 years ago.
Okay. It would grow back without him.
Right.
What?
Yep.
Where was this?
Allendale.
Wow. Does he have it there still?
No, he does not have that business anymore. And I don't believe there's a pond business on that property anymore.
Okay.
There might still be water hyacinth on that property.
Well, that's the thing is like the seed, so-called a seed bank. Like, there's all these, you guys have probably heard of garlic mustard. That's the famous terrestrial one. And like, It's so easy to pull. It's so easy. But the problem is that it has these like tiny hundreds of seeds that burst everywhere, and then they get into the seed bank. And so you have to pull it for like 10 years before you actually exhaust that seed bank. And so, you know, even if you remove, like if you stop growing like water hyacinth, you know, for that seed bank to then be exhausted is going to take a long time. That's like also one of the big reasons is, okay, sure, it might be easy to remove it by hand, but then, you know, how long is that seed bank going to last for?
Could be decades if no one does anything with it, right?
Yeah, I am, again, there's still a lot of uncertainty around like what is setting seed and where, but
so
I don't know.
When you talk about removing it, that can't be cheap.
No, and I'm not the one that is removing it. I give a lot of credit to folks who I work with all the time who are the ones that are going out there. And it's called that whole effort of when something is just found, EDRR. Early detection, rapid response. And it's one of the main components of invasive species management. You have prevention, you have EDRR, and then you also have what's called like control, like a long-term, okay, we're not getting, it's like milfoil or, you know, hydrilla, like we're not getting rid of it. It's here to stay. How do we prevent it from having impact? So the EDRR component, you know, it has to be done quickly. You know, sometimes it is just a few plants, like that one drain, 3,000 pounds. And so it's another reason that I would advocate for, you know, not selling it and obviously, of course, not dumping it is that, you know, even if you it doesn't establish, it's going to cost money for these agencies to respond. And then that cost gets passed on to the taxpayer who had nothing to do with releasing it. And so, you know, it's a bit of a not selfish, but a little bit in that, you know, it's that kind of, well, I'm going to do what I want, and then the costs and the, you know, consequences someone else is going to pay for.
Just oh, that never happens. That was sarcasm, by the way, for those of you who can't see my face.
Yeah, when was like the tragedy of the commons? When was that paper? I mean, yeah, that story has been around. And the other, you know, point I was going to make is, you know, just because something is being sold doesn't mean that it's good for you or good. Right. I mean, how many examples do we have of that?
Well, yeah.
Just because it's legal doesn't mean that it's a good thing to do.
Yeah. But some people might say just because it's illegal doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah. Just as an example of controlling. So Great Lakes Fishery Commission, Fisheries and Oceans Canada and control agents, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife have implemented a program to control sea lamprey in the Great Lakes. These programs include both chemical and alternative control methods. This total control program budget exceeds $21 million per year.
Yeah.
And then you have people like us or like our listeners who are saying like, okay, yeah, but why can't you take more time to make sure that everybody's completely educated that these things are a problem? And there's not enough money. Like, I'm sure Georgia wants to have a lovely website that lists every species that you could possibly have an invasive, but they probably just don't have the time, resources, and money to afford it.
No, it's totally true. And even if you did have all of the time, money, and resources, and you had everyone perfectly educated, you know, accidents happen, right? Mm-hmm. I was on my way to Muskegon today, and a rain event so severe that my brand new car was hydroplaning on the freeway hit. And, you know, these kinds of things that are happening are more and more often. And you know what happens when you have a backyard pond that gets hit with a really severe rain event? Okay, it floods. And you're not at home, and all of a sudden your water lettuce, your water hyacinth is trickling into the nearby stream or river, and it gets into the local watershed. And so even if you're a conscientious pond owner who would never release anything, you know, accidents happen.
So we're talking about aquarium people, though, not pond people.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I mean, you're not wrong. You're completely right.
I'm going to throw this out here, though. We had an employee here whose entire home flooded.
That's true. But also we have dozens of people who set up seasonal ponds every year too. And many of those have water lettuce in them.
Maybe even most.
Maybe even most, yeah.
So little container ponds in their backyard.
It's super popular.
Right. I mean, yeah, I've been speaking in general towards the ownership and sale of water lettuce.
No, Amy just made a really good point because, yes, lots of our listeners set up their little patio ponds. Yeah.
The point is we can't control what happens with it at all once it leaves our hands.
And again, Red Root Floater, guys. Red Root Floater, Red Root Floater.
I mean, I gotta look this infinitely one up. I don't know better that one. It's in cool. every possible way. It flowers. Mm. It fruits in aquariums, too.
It does.
You get little tiny red fruits. I don't know who's... Maybe my gnats are pollinating it.
That could be. And it's red root.
Yeah,
the roots
like
are red.
Bright
They're
red.
Really cool.
Huh. Yeah. Is it native here? No.
No, it's very tropical.
Okay.
Yeah, it's okay. very tropical.
Nice.
Yeah. Charles will get out the ultimate book the and book. Show pictures of red
The plant
shoulder.
Bible.
I cannot wait. Right.
Yes. Have you seen the plant Bible yet? We could talk. We talk about the plant Bible on podcasts all the time. This is by Crystal Castleman is her name. She's a German woman, and if I wrote the absolute coolest, most incredible, comprehensive aquarium plant book I could ever think of, it would not be nearly as good as this book. Yeah, and Crystal is this amazing person who travels to all these crazy locations and goes digging through swamps in Thailand. Mm-hmm. To find these really cool, amazing new aquarium plants. And so she's actually been responsible for introducing a lot of plants to the aquarium hobby.
Very nice. Yeah, I know that is very similar.
It's Amazonian.
All the best things are.
Hey now, we've had debates about this.
We have.
I yeah. think you were African continent. I was Southeast Asia. Ben was South America.
I was South America. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll stand by that.
So... apparently, we need to have someone who knows do a little analysis and make sure that this is a good alternative.
The Wikipedia page I just looked at was like, it does have a potential to be invasive in the southern U.S. But, you know, we're not going to get that hot for a little while.
And that argument, and okay, maybe this is an interesting way to take this debate a little bit. And then okay. we can get back to water hyacinth and water lettuce. But should people even be allowed to keep aquariums in Florida?
That's,
I mean, in if we're talking about we're talking about getting rid of a potential possible invasive species here in Michigan,
right?
Right.
Yep.
Because it might survive here.
Mm.
In Florida, which by the way is where all of the fish farms are,
and the plant farms,
and the plant farms.
Yes.
It's like they ground zero.
I'm trying really hard not to say a disparaging comment towards Florida. In case you're wondering why I'm quiet. No, Florida's wonderful. I mean, I've got a lot of sympathy for Florida and the invasive species respect because it has so many species.
Yeah, I have heard one of the greatest places to go collecting for aquarium fish is not the Amazon.
Yeah.
It's the ditches outside the
Yeah, farms. I was about to say, didn't we have a podcast where we said the world records... red-tailed catfish, which is an Amazonian native, the world record, clown knife, and paku were all caught in Florida.
Yeah.
I believe it. Yeah. I mean, the climate is just perfect for, you know, they probably have like one of the highest diversities of anywhere because they've got the mix of just so many things. I mean, I would never advocate, say, for example, something's already in Florida. Like, I would never advocate for then allowing them to have that because again another thing I didn't mention with the water lettuce, so you say you have like one population that got introduced and that's what's reproduced and that's like so it's the same, right? And it's the same genome and same type of plant. If you bring in another, say water lettuce, and they, you know, have like flower, you increase the genetic diversity, so it makes them hardier and, you know, kind of a tougher plant. And so the argument against allowing, you know, further introductions of something that you already have is that, well, it's just going to, you know, improve the stock of that plant. And so, I mean, I could see like, well, if Florida already has something, then maybe we should just let them have it. But again, I just don't
but
think
what
that's
about all stuff they don't have yet.
Right.
And yeah. They have hurricanes.
Or what maybe. About all the areas around that if we increase that population density is more likely to migrate up?
Yeah, I have a pretty extreme opinion on stuff like that because of the climate and stuff. I don't think open fish farms should be legal in Florida, period. Like, it's just, like, the economic impact to the rest of the state for, like, let's face it, guys, the ornamental fish industry is not that big. Like, yes, it's big, but in the grand scheme of everything else that's happening in Florida, it's not a good trade-off.
Not to mention, it's not producing better fish.
No.
Yeah, that's true.
That goes deep. But it's part of this discussion, right? Where if we're going to talk about whether or not we should keep water hyacinth or water lettuce here, should we be telling all of our listeners in Florida that they should get rid of their aquariums? Guess where the invasive lionfish came from, right?
Right.
That was the aquarium hobby. There's a damselfish that's invasive in Florida. That's just in saltwater. In freshwater, the list is,
I think it's 40-plus species for sure.
Established.
From
Yeah. Pocostomus are like damaging canals in Florida. Pocostomus are still completely legal
right.
to keep, breed, reproduce, and sell.
And I think they have three different species established. Plecos.
Yeah.
Not just the common, I think they have three species now.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so one of my big things that I do is risk assessment. And for Florida, everything pretty much is high risk. And so, yeah, I mean, if you guys are putting it out there, I definitely would agree that anything that's not native shouldn't be kept.
And I'm going to raise my hand and say, bro, they have a lot of cool native fish.
Well, that's the best thing. I'm like, the native things aren't senescing in the winter. Like, surely they could have some native options going
on.
Yeah,
like, what's the little dwarf sunfish? The Okeanopan
Okeys. We all know the aquarium hobby is dependent on diversity.
Yeah.
Like, it's not dependent on native. That's not, the hobby would go away in Florida if you couldn't keep anything that wasn't native, or if you could only keep stuff that either was native or couldn't survive in Florida waters. There would no longer be the existence of an aquarium hobby in Florida. Psh, gone. Right? Okay, there'd be 10 dorks.
Yeah, but exactly. People who are like, I'm going to go wade around in the swamp for 3 days.
I was about to say, aquarium fish keeping in Florida would become basically killifish keepers. And that doesn't sound bad to me.
Only rivulus, though.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean like killifish keepers themselves. I mean that level of
like dorm. That type of person.
Yes. Yeah.
But there's a gap though. It's not like you can just get native fish. You have to be that dedicated to go and get them. Yeah. And you may not even be getting them legally. Like there, if I wanted to keep a Michigan native tank, I would be doing it illegally probably. So like, what would be the alternative?
I think there are, again, I'm not like a, you know, expert in this area, but I think there are native plants at least being sold.
Yeah.
I'm getting a head nod in the crowd here. Yes.
Yeah.
So that you wouldn't be, you know, illegally harvesting something.
Yeah, we can get some native plants from our plant wholesalers in Florida.
Yeah.
But we can't get them from Michigan.
Right. Yeah. Well, maybe Florida should just have native Michigan natives.
Yeah,
there we go. And need cold weather.
Right. I would love if there was a program like Kent County has a really awesome native plant like for gardening program. They do sales 2 or 3 times a year where they're selling like native plants to people's gardens. So like if it was a program like that where there is things happening where you can get them, you know, I think there are a lot of people who would be interested in that type of fish keeping. But maybe it wouldn't replace the platy and guppy tanks for most beginners and a lot of people. It's not the same hobby.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think also, again, you know, I have two little kids who love this fish store. And, you know, thinking about, you know, they're learning so much in school about the environment and ecology and even, you know, native plants and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So while for, I know, I'm sure many aficionados in the aquarium industry, having like natives would be just way too boring or, you know, our limited stock. But for families who are, you know, keeping tanks, having something that you could probably tell your kids like, well, these ones are okay and they're good for this reason and engaging in that kind of way would be, I don't know, a suggestion that you could.
Yeah, we definitely need to give kids more credit on that. They are definitely little scientists, all of them.
Yes. Oh, yes.
How fast is this list going to grow?
The list of things that aren't allowed?
The list of things that we should be questioning here in Michigan.
Is that a climate change question or is that
right.
Just to be clear here?
Both.
So you said there's a list that the list that you're talking about that water hyacinth and water lettuce are number 2 and number 4 on.
Yep.
Right? How many are on that list total?
Well, so this is a list that it's not... It's not an official list. It's just an academic list, which, as we all know, just
stuff y'all are looking
hidden
at.
Away. Yep. So the thing about the list growing, your comment is that, and you know, the comment about Florida having, you know, hundreds of all these invasives. The fact is that, like, most non, so again, we're throwing around these words, invasive, non-native, non-indigenous, very casually. And there are whole papers published just talking about the distinction between those. And I think they're very important. Mm-hmm. And so we have native or indigenous, which means it's just, it's from this area. And then you have invasive, which invasive, sometimes people use it to mean non-native, but actually a more correct description would be something that's not native and also causing harm, causing impact. And the reality is that most of the species that are not native are not invasive and probably not going to be invasive. They might kind of survive, but they don't cause a problem. And while ideally we don't have them in the ecosystem, they're probably a much better idea to sell those than, say, water lettuce, which due to their, you know, their reproduction, their fast modes of growth are just much more invasive. And so the list might grow by a little bit, but again, I think, you know, researchers and state agencies are trying to be smart, and they're not trying to make this list to be hundreds of species long. They're trying to identify the worst ones, the ones that really shouldn't be there. And those two are water lettuce and water hyacinth. There are plenty of other tropical species that no one's probably going to take away or suggest we regulate.
Have you been watching hydrilla?
Yeah, they just found it in Michigan.
Yeah.
I know. That's a bad one. That's a nasty.
I've never seen that on an aquarium list. But it probably came from aquariums, right? Or was that a pond plant?
You know, a lot of times they just get grouped into like live trade, and they don't distinguish between whether it was an aquarium or a pond plant.
Because I mean, I look at plant lists.
Probably I should know this. Right.
Yeah. And I don't know that I've seen hydrilla on a list.
We might be looking it up. I don't think it's a ballast. I mean, because it's a freshwater species, you tend not to get purely freshwater.
Oh, Wikipedia specifically blames aquariums.
Does it?
Yeah. Okay. That's I think.
And it's cited. I wonder where that came from. Hold on.
The citation is your mom.
Citation is State of Washington Department of Ecology. So.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
We did that. Now watch. I'll look at my list of fish or of plants that I've personally reproduced, and it'll be on my list there. Do you know how long... Is it banned in Michigan? Or not yet?
Hydrilla. I imagine that it... not on the quick list that I jotted down of ones that are. I'd have to double check. Again, like I said, so I've done a lot of work with, you know, what things are regulated where and then how to control the various things. And like it's, as your listener pointed out, it's challenging to keep track because a lot of us are moving targets of what's.
Oh, yeah. It is prohibited.
Okay. There we go.
Okay. I wonder how long it's been prohibited.
I don't know. One of, or does it say? One of the little tidbits here is that apparently they tried an herbicide on it and only developed herbicide-resistant hydrilla.
Yeah, there's some pretty crazy stories of resistance that happens. I think Floridone is the one that it gets resistant to. And then you get these, and I can't remember the exact mechanism, but it forms like this chemical byproduct that then gets into like the fish, and then bald eagles were eating these fish, and then like it was like creating lesions in their brain and like killing them. I should, like, it's crazy. This one story in particular was quite famous, and I'm probably getting a little bit of it, or a lot of it wrong, but Floridone resistant hydrilla. And so then you also have these like different forms of monoecious and dioecious, things that are like just, you know, the different genetics of it. And so, yeah, hydrolla is a really nasty one, and we do not want it in Michigan.
At a certain point, you have to, like, separate yourself from the tragedy of it all and just admire, like, how amazing these things are at surviving. Like, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know that it's wrong. They just, like, know they have to live.
On the wrong day, if someone looks at me weird, I'll start crying, and this plant's like, oh, you're throwing your herbicide at me? I'm fine.
Yeah, delicious. Give me more.
Not only will I survive, I will destroy everything around me.
Some gumption there.
So that's why also, again, that genetic diversity, you know, like the more times you introduce something, the more chances that you're going to get this, like, this herbicide resistance, right?
How far along are we in the process with water hyacinth and water lettuce to making it that we don't have a choice? Like, I mean,
I've got no idea. That's something and that's happening, would be happening in Lansing, that I don't know.
But I mean, they consult with people like you to.
Yep. Yeah. We produce, you know, we publish these papers that are, very management focused, policy focused. You know, again, like I said, they all know kind of the bad ones. And I think they're working their hardest to do, you know, do the best in terms of identify, because as I said, we don't want to take away everything. They want to take away the things that are going to be the worst things, right. and doing that in a way that they can do. I know many of them, and they're you know, they do an excellent job in balancing that kind of compromise. And so I have no idea, and I can't speculate as far as if it's even in the process or how far along it would be in that process.
When we started talking about this evening, Amy said we have it in probably 10 tanks downstairs, and you said we can't be friends anymore. It's that big of a... I mean, obviously we're going to still be friends, but I'm going to start taking care of it, right? But how big of a deal is it that stores are selling it?
I mean, so like I said, it is... So water lettuce, lettuce or hyacinth, it's one of the world's 100 worst invasive species.
That would be water hyacinth. Like, I'm actually just very familiar with that list.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a good one. I mean, it's just a no-brainer. Like, in sort of what I do, like, some are like, oh, is it really such a big deal? But it's one of those things, like, there's no... Like, okay, you say, okay, it might not survive. Okay, it might not... Don't take that risk. Like, to me, it's not worth that risk. In the immortal words of Jeff Goldblum, life finds a way. And that even if it's too cold now, it's getting warmer, and that it's, you know, it's gonna find a way to eventually establish. And the more we reduce that probability, the better off we are.
It's a tough responsibility as somebody who's trying to manage plants, because there are quite a few things that are either on that borderline or getting close to it that, you know, I've always sort of made my distinction of, well, if it's on the prohibited list, that's when we say, like, no. Until then, we'll just wait to hear. But sometimes it seems like we can't really wait to hear. So, like, when does something go from something where I should just sort of be aware that there's a risk in the future to... okay, I know that there's a risk and that's a decision I have to make for myself versus waiting until regulation catches up to that information. There's a lot of gray area there for me, and it's hard to decide. Rotala rotundifolia, that's something that's on that list, and that's one of the most basic aquarium plants you can keep.
Yeah. One of the best ways, so I mentioned that Sea Grant. They're an unbiased, they don't get their money from, like, any real, you know, person or group that would sway their opinion. And yet they're not bound by the same rules that, like, government agencies are. And so they can say things that are, you know, science. Okay, that came out wrong. The people that I know in state government are science-based 100%.
Once you introduce politics.
But they also have other, they have other considerations. Whereas Sea Grant don't have quite so many other considerations. And the people there, they just produce really great work. And so if they have some resources that list things, I think that is a really safe source of information to use.
Great.
And Ripple. You mentioned Paige, I think she's has been with SeaGrant or so MSU Extension also does a lot of really great work.
Cool. Yeah, all I really know about Ripple is they come in and tell us don't put anything in the water. And that's about it, unfortunately, that we definitely need to get them on so that they can give us their spiel.
Yeah. Well, maybe you guys should like, if you guys stop selling water lettuce, it could be like a front page headline.
Mm-hmm.
Aquarium,
press release.
Aquarium store stops, halts sale of water lettuce in advance of regulation.
Yeah. Make it our hill to die on.
Or just make it a way to publicize.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can find the store at, what's your address on Division Street? 453 is out Division.
Mm-hmm. Watercolorsaquariumgallery.com.
More Dutch.
So what are the big takeaways from tonight?
Let me think. So, I mean, obviously the specific ones are water lettuce and water hyacinth.
Yes.
They're beautiful. They are popular, but they are bad for a reason. They cause a lot of impact environmentally, recreationally, and they're just not worth it.
Especially because there's great alternatives.
There are great alternatives, both native and non-native, I would argue. And I'm sure you guys can publish those resources wherever you publish those sorts of resources for listeners and viewers. Other takeaways.
Don't dump anything from your aquarium into any place that it might potentially get into a water system.
And tell other people to not dump things.
I think I heard one time that it's a $2,500 fine if you dump something. Like if you release a non-native organism into an ecosystem, unless you know it's illegal, then it's a $5,000 fine. Right. Guess what? All y'all listening, y'all know.
Y'all been informed.
Sorry. Here's a question.
I would love to see that on like a court transcript. Listen to Water Clouds Aquarium Gallery podcast.
But I've heard a lot of debate about this. Is the toilet a safe place to dump aquarium water and plants? I mean, I put duckweed down the toilet a lot.
Yeah. I wouldn't know. They say no. They tell it no. I mean, the likelihood that it's going to be fine, that's going to survive is probably pretty low. But the answer for plants is simple. They just throw it in the garbage, like the garbage being your garbage can. You know, fish being, a more sentient creature. Those guidelines may have changed, so I'm not going to overspeak, but again, that Ripple or Habitat Attitude also have, I don't know, you guys take trade-ins. And so if you're, at a loss, you can come to your local responsible aquarium store, but plants are simple. They just bag them up and throw them in the garbage. And I know that it's, I compost at home and there are some things I just don't compost. When I go pick garlic mustard, it goes in a plastic bag and it goes in the garbage, even though it breaks my heart to throw biological matter in the landfill.
So we should not compost the water lettuce that we're going to have to get rid of.
Officially, no.
Okay. That broke your heart to say that, didn't it?
It did. I mean, luckily the quantities that we're talking about in a home aquarium is pretty small. And so it would be fine
to
throw in the garbage.
I've seen your compost system. I know your commitment to composting and I'm jealous of it. I mean, it's pretty sweet.
Right now the fruit flies are horrendous. So every time I go out there, I hold my breath and I throw it in. I'm like, why am I doing this? Why am I like, it's just that one small drop that we all do, that one fight we do. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
We crushed apples to brew apple cider at Alicia's house not long ago.
Ooh, I'm sure that's lovely, stinky
compost.
There's
a lot of crushed apples in the compost system right now because of that.
Yes. Fruit flies are very happy, but
Alicia, thank you so much for taking time out of your evening to hang out with us and talk about this fun geek stuff we like to talk about so much. I really do appreciate it.
As always, it's my pleasure and an honor to be here. I, again, said before, but you guys do good work, important work, and I think you're one of the few aquarium stores that are leading this charge against invasive species, so keep it up.
Thank you very much.
And any of you out there who are also in leadership positions at aquarium stores or aquarium clubs, you're also on the front lines here. So just because we have a podcast doesn't mean you don't have a voice and you kind of have to use it for this. You're the ones who need to be informed. So if you've got any questions in our audience, you know, we still have a few minutes where we're going to be on live. So this is your last chance to get those questions in. But you can also post on our Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast listeners group on Facebook. Questions, comments, debates. I mean, I'd love to see some good conversations come out of this episode. And head over to watercolorsaquariumgallery.com to shop for not water lettuce anymore, but lots of other plants, which should be lovely in your aquarium and not outside.
Special thank you to our members for watching. Thank you so much for listening. Let's have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.